This presentation has been previously broadcast.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. The number is 888-914-9149. A big shout out to all of our new listeners who are just learning about Relevant Radio, maybe for the first time listening to the program. Welcome aboard. My number again, 888-914-9149. Cyrus, did you see that video? I mean, I couldn't believe my eyes. It's a TikTok video. It doesn't last very long, maybe 20 seconds. There's a woman on a Spirit Airline plane smoking a cigarette. You saw that, didn't you?
I thought smoking on a plane was illegal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It doesn't show what happened to her. And, I guess the woman with her phone who was filming this, she says, could you please not smoke on the plane?
Oh, no.
Yeah. But she just lit up and she's smoking a cigarette. She's not trying to hide it.
Oh, she pulls her mask down. So she's wearing a mask, pulls it down, smokes a cigarette.
That is amazing. I'm sure that she got into some kind of trouble. There must be some fine. I mean, tampering with a lavatory smoke detector can give you a fine. I mean, I've listened to this announcement from the flight attendants a billion times, and they do announce that kind of thing. So I could just picture somebody in the bathroom trying to disable the smoke detector, and that's why they're there. But it reminds me, just in passing, of course, smoking was on airplanes was common. It was not illegal. I remember I took a long flight from L.A. to Seoul, South Korea for some speaking engagement stuff I had to do. And that's in the time, and that would have been 94, I believe. And that's when they had smoking sections. They still had smoking sections on the airplane. And you could smoke a pipe or a cigar, whatever, cigarette typically. And of course, that's long gone now. And people are so conditioned to just be horrified if somebody lights up a cigarette, especially like inside a place like a restaurant, certainly not an airport. But it reminds me a little bit of how freely people used to litter in this country. And I remember as a kid, the anti-littering efforts on the part of the government in the commercials on television. And boy, did it really work. It got to the point where if you saw somebody littering, you would come unglued. You'd be angry. You'd be like, hey, I got to call the police. It was just, we went from being a country where littering was no big deal and there was no social stigma attached to it, to then now a huge social stigma is attached to littering. The same thing happened with smoking, which is just why it was just so shocking that she would light up on an airplane. Anyway, 888-914-9149. Now, here's something I know you're going to find interesting. Not so encouraging, but it is interesting. This is courtesy of the Christian Post. More than 60% of born-again Christians in America. So this, by definition, is going to, by the way they do this polling, they're polling basically evangelical Protestants. So they're not including in this figure Catholics, because many Protestants don't think the Catholics are Christian, et cetera, et cetera. So just keep in mind that these statistics are going to be rather focused in terms of Protestant folk, but I think they are generally descriptive of people in general. So more than 60% of born-again Christians in America between the ages of 18 and 39, and that might describe the age group of your children, more than 60% believe that Buddha, Muhammad, and Jesus are all valid paths to salvation. And that over 30% say that they either believe that Jesus sinned, just like other people when he lived on earth, or they're not sure. Now, this is according to a new study by Probe Ministries. This is a study called Religious Views and Practices Survey. The study, which interviewed 3,100 Americans ages 18 to 55 in 2020, they looked at other various previous studies, and they saw a basic biblical worldview decline. So they say that this is a striking decline in Christian religious beliefs and practices over the last 10 years, as the number of self-proclaimed believers to hold these beliefs has increased by nearly 25%. Now, this is not saying that these people have lost their faith, but they've lost elements of their faith that they no longer believe in, such as the uniqueness of Jesus Christ as our Messiah, Redeemer, and Savior. Jesus himself said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And he's really clear. Like in John chapter 3, where he says, "For God so loved the world that he sent his only Son, that whoever should believe in him would not perish but have eternal life." So there's built in to the message of Jesus an exclusivity, meaning that he alone is our Savior. There is no other doorway to heaven. There's no Buddha door to heaven. There's no Muhammad door to heaven. There's no other door to heaven. The only person by whom you can be saved is Jesus Christ. This is what the Catholic Church has always taught. This is what the Bible teaches, of course. So the significance of this survey is that at least among those who are surveyed who identify themselves as evangelical Protestant, the numbers are really slipping. Now, is this true in the Catholic Church? I dare say it is. In fact, if anything, I would guess it's probably even worse among Catholics in the United States than it is among Protestants, but it's pretty bad among Protestants. So they say the drop in the expanded biblical worldview, beliefs about Satan and morals being objective, went from 32% in 2010 to 16% in 2020. So the percentage of born-again Christians, aka evangelical Protestants, with a biblical worldview has been cut in half over the last decade, says the study, which compared the 18 to 29 age group from 2010 with the same group 10 years later, now 30 to 39, so they've gotten 10 years older. This result is a startling degradation in worldview beliefs of born-again Christians over just 10 years. Now, I'm here to tell you, this trend is accelerating. This is not like steadily just evaporating, it's accelerating in pace. This means, according to the study, that even Protestants can have a false view of Jesus Christ and embrace a pluralistic worldview. This, according to Kirby Anderson, president of Probe Ministries. He says, pastors and church leaders just can't assume any longer that the members of their church or Christian organizations have a biblical worldview. There's an even greater drop-off among the general population. The study shows that the basic biblical worldview, for those who claim to hold that, there's a drop-off of 13 to 6%. In terms of an expanded biblical worldview, this is talking about Jesus being Lord and Savior. Jesus, of course, never sinned in his life, even though a startling number of people assume that he probably did. Jesus didn't sin at any point because Jesus is God. He's a divine person. The second person of the Trinity took flesh in the incarnation. And so he has united to himself in his divinity. He has united to himself a perfect and complete human nature. So human mind, human will, human soul, human body, etc. But the person is the one who commits the sin. Your body doesn't commit a sin, you do. Now, you are a body and soul united together as a single unit, but it is you who are committing the sin when you do so, not your body. You can't blame it on your body and say, "Oh, my body did. I didn't do it, my body did it." So in the case of the incarnation, Jesus Christ is true God and true man. So a divine person, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, by definition, being God, can never commit a sin. So Jesus never committed a sin, ever. And that's something that is so bedrock and basic, you'd think that most people would just understand that, but as the study shows, more and more don't understand that. So they say in the aftermath of this study, these disturbing trends are, yes, due to pastors not consistently teaching biblical theory, but they can also be attributed to young Christians who are not paying attention, who are focused nearly exclusively, it seems, on their phones, on social media, and on other content that they deem more compelling, like TikTok and Instagram and YouTube. Not that YouTube is a bad thing, I'm not saying that, but if that's where you get your information and you're feeding on a steady diet of what they're shoveling out on TikTok and other places like that, then naturally it will affect the way you look at the world. Now, I'm not going to get into the fact that, you know, Protestant pastors in general are teaching things that aren't true. That's a separate argument, so I won't get into that. But this is a trend that is accelerating. So I want to offer you a thought that I have on this. And I've been thinking about this story and how it relates to what's going on in the world right now. And basically, it comes down to this. The Bible, in a few places, talks about a great falling away, a great apostasy. Jesus talks about this in Matthew 24. You know, he talks in Matthew 24 about the signs of the end, the signs of the end times, and what you can expect in that regard. And a great falling away is one of the things that he talks about. So he talks about this in verse 10 and forward in Matthew 24. And when you consider what's going on in the world right now, well, let me read you the passage. It says, for nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All this is but the beginning of the birth pangs. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will rise and lead many astray. And because wickedness is multiplied, most men's love will grow cold. But he who endures to the end will be saved. Now, another sign that Jesus indicates about the end times is in verse 14. He says, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. Now, does he mean that immediately after the gospel is preached to all nations? Does it mean that it will happen like the next day? I don't think so. And I also don't think that what he meant by that was that it will literally be preached in every single square mile of the earth, but in a general sense that all areas of the world will have had a chance to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. And then he says, and then will come the end. So one of the indications that there will be that is a portent for the end times is this great falling away. Now, St. Paul talks about this also in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And there we see that he's also giving us a kind of description of what we can expect in the end times. And it's a similarly long list. But here's what he says beginning in verse 1. He says, now the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our assembling to meet him, we beg you, brethren. So he says, concerning this, to not be quickly shaken in mind or excited, either by spirit or by word or by letter purporting to be from us, to the effect that the day of the Lord has come. Let no one deceive you. This is verse 3. Let no one deceive you in any way, for that day will not come unless the rebellion comes first and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself against every so-called God or object of worship so that he takes his seat in the temple, proclaiming himself to be God. And he goes on to talk about this, about how this is going to involve deception. In verse 10, with wicked deception, people will refuse to love truth and so be saved. In verse 11, he says, God will send upon them a strong delusion to make them believe what is false. Now look around and ask yourself, does that not sound familiar? When we talk about, I don't know, something like gender ideology, and it's patently false to say that a man can become a woman or vice versa. Pregnant people is the term now instead of mothers, because if you say mother, that suggests the gender binary, and they hate that. So when I see things like that, I think about 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 11. God sends upon them a strong delusion to make them believe what is false. Verse 12, so that all may be condemned who did not believe the truth but had pleasure in unrighteousness. So in verse 15, he gives us what we're supposed to do. He says, so then, brethren, stand firm and hold to the traditions which you were taught by us, either by word of mouth or by letter. So my point here is simply this. I don't want to extend this out in a long way, but I just want to point out two things. Number one, when you consider the times that we live in, and if you've ever wondered, are these the end times, don't feel like you're alone, because practically every generation since the time of Jesus has wondered the same thing, has thought, this is it. This, it can't get any worse than it is right now. This has to be the end times. These have to be the end times. So I want to temper my remarks simply by saying it's entirely possible that the end times is way in the future. And whatever happens then will be worse than it is now. It's possible that these could be the end times. And there are two reasons why I bring this up, only because there are two elements of what Jesus and St. Paul and others prophesied about when it came to the end times that have now come true. Well, technically three things. The first would be what seems to be this general falling away or a great apostasy. Now, we've never seen this in a global fashion in the history of Christianity, but we're seeing it now, where generally speaking, around the whole globe, people are falling away from their faith in Jesus Christ. It's a strange phenomenon. We're seeing it here in this country, and it's changed in a matter of just a couple of generations. Whereas maybe 50 years ago, upwards of 75% of Americans identified as Christian in some sense, whatever sense that might mean to them. And now the number is down in the 30% and is dropping steadily. The number of people who are identifying as atheists is growing very rapidly. Among people who previously were Christian, now they're embracing an atheist identity and an atheist worldview. So in my studies of Catholic history, sure, we had the Arian heresy. We had other heresies where huge numbers of people were swept away into heresy. Eventually, some came back. But this is not that. That is regional in nature. What we're looking at now is something global in nature. And I do believe for the first time ever in Christian history, are we seeing a phenomenon that if it continues, even if it continues for just another few years, maybe 5 years perhaps, or 10 at the most, it could see a dramatic reduction in the number of people who actually call themselves Christian. And what would that look like? Could it be maybe only 10% of the population that once was Christian might remain Christian? And I don't mean nominally Christian or Christian by association because of your ethnicity. Of course I'm Catholic. I'm Italian kind of thing, even though the person never goes to Mass. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who actually strive to follow Jesus. It could get to that point very quickly, the way things are going. The second thing is this, the whole idea of the ability that we have now technologically to track people, to mark people, to scan people, if that's what we want to think of it as a way to control them. We now have a technological framework within which that can be done on a global scale. And it's already being done in vast numbers in places like China, where you're dealing with billions of people. And the pilot program, so to speak, has been operating successfully in China, and it's going to other parts of the world. So could this be done on a global level? Well, now it can. 20 years ago, it could not have been done. 20 years ago, it would have been technologically impossible. Now it's possible. So then the third thing would be what Jesus said about the gospel being preached to all areas of the world. I can't think of a place in the world where the gospel hasn't yet been preached. Now, Jesus said, and then the end will come. And obviously the end of the world hasn't come yet. So perhaps there's still some elasticity in that issue. And maybe there are some pockets in the world where the gospel has not yet been preached in some fashion. I don't know. I mean, there are some primitive tribes in the Amazon who will shoot at you with bows and arrows if you venture too close to their enclave. I mean, yes, there are groups of people like that, but I think they're relatively small by comparison to the world as a whole, obviously. So those three things make me wonder in a way that I didn't wonder 20 years ago. I'm wondering more now about that question, are we living in the end times? Now, please understand, I'm not prophesying anything. I'm not predicting anything. I'm not saying, yes, these are the end times. I'm not saying that. And I'm always very wary of people who are saying things like that because heretofore, at least, it's always been wrong. But we'll see what happens. Now, before we go to our break, I want to play you an audio clip of a person. Near as I can tell, this is a man who is explaining gender. Now, but when I first saw this, I didn't know what he meant by the term. It's a subsection of a subsection, apparently, of the gender ideology movement. And it's a self-proclaimed gender option, gender fae, F-A-E. And as you'll hear, he gives a series of other sort of permutations on this topic. And Cyrus, how long is this audio? This is about, what, a minute long, 45 seconds long?
55 seconds.
55 seconds, okay. So listen to this, and maybe that will help get, it'll help you understand kind of the level to which we have gotten in terms of people believing things that aren't true.
Hi, everyone. My name is Bunny. I use bun pronouns. I identify as gender fae. What does being gender fae mean? Gender fae is a type of non-binary gender fluid identity that ranges between agender and feminine with no feelings of masculinity. There is no single set point. It can move around. There are associated identities that are in that family. There is gender fawn, which is similar but never encompasses feelings of femininity. There's gender fair, which is a form of gender fluidity that never encompasses completely, entirely being male. So there are feelings of masculinity. It's just not identifying as male. Then there is gender floor, which is a form that never encompasses male, female, masculine, feminine. It is a type of gender fluidity that only encompasses agender or non-binary identities. And there we have the gender fae family of identities.
Okay. If you want to see that, Cyrus will post a link to it. So you, seeing it is even more, how should we put it, noteworthy. I'm trying to choose the right words here. It's more noteworthy to see this presentation than it is to hear it, but hearing it is, it's quite something. And it just gets me back to what I just read to you a minute ago. This is in 2 Thessalonians 2:11. Therefore, God sends upon them a strong delusion to make them believe what is false. So we're going to take a break and we'll come back to your phone calls. The number to dial is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
There's a certain Jesuit priest by the name of James Martin, S.J., kind of a gadfly, and he's all over social media, and he's super, super into promoting LGBTQ things, and he had this on Twitter this morning. As the beginning of the school year approaches, some Catholic high schools are barring students from choosing their own pronouns, he, him, she, her, they, them, etc. Not long ago, a young trans person surprised me by telling me that the use of pronouns, and then he goes on for the rest of the thread. So in other words, he's basically championing this idea, but he says that the use of pronouns was among the most, and there's a, that's in kind of accented, or I'm sorry, asterisks. It was among the most important ways to make LGBTQ kids feel not only seen but safe. The refusal to use the pronoun they preferred was considered offensive, insulting, and shaming. Until speaking with them, I hadn't considered it an urgent issue, but they opened my eyes. And he goes on and on in this vein, which is typical for him. Chad Pecknold, who is a professor of theology, I believe, at Catholic University, he says in response to that, he says, Pope Francis has called this gender ideology demonic, a grave threat to the dignity of the human person, made either male or female. Our pronouns, quote unquote, are given by God, inscribed in our nature, not constructed by our desires. And then he says to James Martin, S.J., repent and believe the good news. That's a very good comeback. C.C. Pecknold, way to go. Okay, so now you heard, you know, kind of from the negative, difficult side of things. Now I want to play for you, courtesy of friends of the program who sent this in, and I really appreciate that. This is about a 2.5 minute video. You're going to hear the audio of it. And this comes from the 60s, right, Cyrus? The guy who's speaking is talking from back in the 60s.
This is an experience he had as a child watching his father. And it really speaks for itself.
Yeah. So let's listen. Now, this is a positive and encouraging note, and we have to keep those involved as well.
People think we're more divided as a country now than we've been in a long time. I know it can seem that way, but when I was a little kid in 1969, the Vietnam War was tearing the country apart. And they'd shot John F. Kennedy, and they'd shot Bobby Kennedy. They'd shot Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And there was the Manson family and the Zodiac Killer, and it just felt like the whole country lost its mind. My father, who'd grown up in the Depression, well, his faith in humanity was just at a low ebb. And the two of us that June were driving from L.A. to Oakland in our old 1960 Oldsmobile, and the water pump blew out south of Bakersfield. And so this was long before cell phones, so we were about, well, we were going to have to hoof it like 9 or 10 miles into town when this young cowboy pulls up in a flatbed and offers to tow us in. And all my dad had on him for money was this old Chevron gas card, so he kept telling this young fella, you know, I can't pay you. And the young cowboy's looking at him like, yeah, I wasn't going to charge you. So he rolls us into town, and this is a Sunday, so nothing's open. So he has to go get his mechanic friend to open up his garage, and my dad says, hey, listen, I don't have any money. And the mechanic says, you know, we'll work something out. And then they all realize they don't have the actual parts, so now they got to go roust out the local auto parts store owner, and they bring him down. And my father's like, okay, we need to talk about how this is all going to get settled, because he just couldn't imagine anybody being this trusting about the money. So the cowboy says, look at it and make it feel better. I got a bunch of watermelons I need to get loaded onto my flatbed, and it's pretty hot work, and if you help me out, I'll pay for the part. So next thing you know, we're all unloading watermelons from inside a rail car. That's about 140 degrees. And 90 minutes later, we are soaked in sweat, and up rolls the car, just running like a top. And my dad says, I really don't know how to thank you fellas and for this good turn. And we're turning to go, and the mechanic gets this look on his face and says, whoa, where do you think you're going? And you could see on my father's face just all the fear and distrust come to the surface. He's stiffened like a leopard. And the mechanic says, no. My wife's going to make us all Sunday dinner, and you and the boy can get a shower and a clean shirt, and it'll make the drive easier for all of us. So we sat down for a dinner of fried chicken from the chicken right over there and corn on the cob from the corn right over there. Man, I got to tell you, we'll never have a meal that good ever again. And my dad didn't say maybe three words the whole drive, but when we got home, I got into bed, and I was just about to turn off a light, and he stops in the doorway, and he says to me, no matter what you see in the movies or on TV or you read in the papers, you listen to me. That's how people really are. And about a month later, Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. So, keep the faith.
That is cool. Who is speaking there? I didn't catch that part, Cyrus.
You know, I don't even know. It was just a headshot of a guy telling a story.
Can you post that, please? I want everyone to see that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's great. And he's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the midst of everything, and there are plenty of things to be concerned about, plenty of things to wring your hands about, don't forget that part. Don't forget that there are good people out there. And, you know, Jesus still reigns as Christ the King. Even if not in every heart, he still reigns in many hearts. That's great. I'm glad that we played that. Thank you. Looks to me like Jim is dabbing his eyes, from what I can see. Hand him a Kleenex, Cyrus.
It's a great reminder there are a lot more good people out there than bad.
Isn't it weird, though, how the bad people seem to get all of the attention?
They sure do.
They seem to shout the loudest.
Yep. And even though I know this, I know there's more good people. It's kind of like when you could have a great day. Everything's going well, and one bad thing happens, and it's that one bad thing that sticks with you. And it's so hard to let that go. And that's kind of what like all this bad news is like. And there's a lot. Most people are good people.
You know, let me put it this way. I used to think that, and I don't mean to be contrarian on you, Cyrus. I used to think that. Now, the more it goes, the more I think that maybe many people are good people. I don't know about most anymore. And the reason I say that is it seems like there is a kind of an increasing tolerance for evil in the world, and more people, it seems, are becoming, you know, lukewarm perhaps, or becoming comfortable with evil things. Doesn't really bother them anymore. And so I hope you're right, Cyrus, and I hope I'm wrong. Maybe it's just pessimistic on my part, but I really hope that you're right, that most people are good. I think in a certain sense that's true. Most people, I think, are fundamentally decent. But
and maybe it's trying to stay decent that allows that evil to come in. So you don't want to make waves. you know, I don't want to take someone's, I don't know what the terminology is. I don't want to take someone's rights away, or I don't want to.
Have you ever been in a, been in a situation where maybe you had your kids with you and you're, you know, filling out forms or something like that for whatever it may be. And they give, have you seen the gender options?
So it's male, female. Funny that you bring that up. That is exactly what just happened with me on Friday. Exactly what happened.
Do tell, what happened?
So I was with both my kids. They're getting their vaccine. It was the second one. And it's at their school, and there's, you know, school people standing by, and it says gender, male, female, other.
This is a form you're filling out?
This is a form. This is a medical form that has other as gender. So it's not, we're not talking about, you know, if whatever imaginary land, you know, you live in your day-to-day life, mm-hmm. which whatever, but this is a medical form.
Was gender fawn one of the options?
No, it wasn't. I think that falls under other. Okay. And I'm sure they'll get upset. People are going to start getting upset about that at some point too, because other just doesn't cover it. They won't. Anyway.
So what were the options?
So I said male, it was male, female, other.
Okay.
And I said other, and both my kids knew exactly what I was thinking. And they're like, Dad, shush, Dad, no, no. And there was serious concern that
they didn't want you to make waves?
They didn't even want me to question the other box out loud. Mm-hmm. Not where they were, not in that environment. And I was like, all right, guys, we're going to have a conversation about this on the way home.
Mm. I bet that was an interesting conversation.
It was.
So they were fearful that you were speaking the truth, and I guess they believe what you believe about this. But yet they were fearful of repercussions if you said it out loud.
They were more scared of repercussions than the truth. Absolutely. Wow. Yep. What will these people think? What will happen to them if their dad is deemed an independent thinker?
Wow. And you have great kids.
Yeah, they're awesome. They're really good kids.
And they have attentive parents. So it makes me think about all the kids whose parents maybe are not quite so attentive, and how much more so those kids are probably conditioned to, you know, maybe it's true, but you can't say it out loud.
Yeah.
Don't let anyone hear you say that.
Yep. Shh, dad. No, dad.
I hope you gave them a very serious dad look in response. Like, I can't believe you guys are saying that.
Yeah, I don't know if they could. Hopefully it came out of my eyes because we're all wearing masks.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Yeah, well, so it's not fun. These are not fun conversations.
No. But you have to have them.
But they're important conversations. And I try to stress to them everything that they're watching. All their little TikTok and social media videos that I cannot seem to get them away from. I was just like, you are being manipulated on a level that is unprecedented. Mm-hmm. And they have the people that make these products know how to manipulate children. And you guys are smart. I'm not saying you're not smart, but if you think you can't be manipulated, you're not as smart as I think you are. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to give them. I'm planting seeds. I'm planting seeds for them that will hopefully grow as they get older and they think about what they're watching and consuming.
It's good that you're doing that. More power to you on that. And I know you're a good dad and they're good kids. And it just makes me think in terms of what it's like out there for, as I say, for parents who are not so attentive. You know, I mean, isn't it interesting that the kids are fearful? Because what that means is that they know, because they've seen it, what happens to people who get out of line? What happens to uppity people?
That's right.
Who say something about whether it's, you know, male and female or something like that. They know what happens to those people.
To even question it is to be hateful. It's me. I must have a hateful heart to even call into question other.
Yeah. Well, that's what a coincidence. Fascinating story. And I'm glad that you had the chance to talk to your kids about it, because maybe next time when they're faced with that and dad's not around, then the question they're going to have to ask themselves is, am I going to stand up for what's right? Or will I just go with the flow?
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
That's all I can do.
Well, well done, Cyrus. Well done. Let's take a break and we'll come to phone calls on the other side of this. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now.
888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Let's go!
Yeah, let's go. Let's go to Andrea in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hi, Andrea.
I have an observation to make. I'm 73, and I've always thought that there are some things that are difficult and some things that are easy. And calculus is hard. Astrophysics is hard. Theoretical physics is hard. Sex is not hard. Sex is easy.
Do you mean the act of, or are you talking about identifying people, male and female?
Both. Yeah. Both.
Yeah.
It's a human drive. Mm-hmm. And for it to be, for people, and it's also in every chromosome of every cell of your body. You're either male or female. It's stamped right in there. Mm-hmm. So to be a gender-fluid person, you have to deny science and your physical existence.
It's a flight from reality.
It drives it.
It's a flight from reality.
You, it drives every hormone in your body. It's not in your body, so it has to be in your mind. And I think people's minds have been clouded and confused, and it has to be an agenda.
Well, here's something that you'll hear on the other side of that conversation, Andrea, and that is that people, they wouldn't say that, you know, the Y chromosome, the X chromosome, they wouldn't deny that. They would say that, although that is a scientific reality, that doesn't define that person's sex, that person's gender. This is why the term gender is so common now, because sex, and we're talking here about your identity as a male or female, that is the binary. And now gender has replaced sex as if it were a synonym. It's not a synonym. They're closely related, but they're not synonymous. And so what they would tell you is, okay, yeah, okay, you know, X and Y chromosomes and all that, but that doesn't define who I am in terms of my gender. And what I feel about myself is what defines my gender. And so—
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's in their minds.
Well, that's my point. In other words, you're talking about science, and that's true. It's correct. I agree with you. But the way that they avoid that is to say, well, science doesn't determine this. It's what I decide, how I identify. That's what determines this, you see. So I've had the conversation with people who just won't accept the science. They don't care about it. It doesn't matter to them because it doesn't, in their minds, it doesn't have any effect one way or the other. It's what's inside their head that is all that really matters to them.
Well, that's kind of my point, too, that it's not, you don't have to consider the physical part, but you can, it's a mental disorder.
Are you asking me a question?
I think has in the past been considered a disorder.
Yeah, you know, the term gender dysphoria
comes out
of that. No, I suppose it's not new. I mean, human nature is prone to all sorts of pathologies, this being one of them. But in any case, what's new about this is the way in which it is completely swamping all of society. It's now everywhere. It has permeated everything. In fact, yeah. Andrea, I want to say thank you for your phone call. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Cyrus, if you have the audio handy, let's play the audio clip from people in Jamaica who are protesting the fact that the U.S. Embassy in, I guess it would be in, is it Kingstown, I guess? Just trying to think of where it would be. It doesn't actually say, but it's the U.S. Embassy. It must be in Kingstown. So the U.S. Embassy is flying on the flagpole out in front of the embassy. There's an American flag, thankfully, at the top of the flagpole, and immediately beneath it is the rainbow flag. And so a whole bunch of Jamaicans were protesting this, and I want to send a shout-out and a thanks to Obianuju Okocha, who on Twitter retweeted that, and that's where I saw it. So thanks for that, Uju. So Cyrus, let's play it. This is about 90 seconds of audio of people in Jamaica who are reacting to the U.S. government forcing this upon them, glorifying the LGBTQ++ flag, the rainbow flag, and they don't like it. And here's what they're saying about it.
And as you might be able to see in the background, the U.S. Embassy continues to fly the LGBT flag, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender flag, in breach of the Vienna Convention, Articles 3.1e, Article 20, and Article 41. Right? They are being hostile towards our laws, our culture, and our own democratic system. Instead of flying the Jamaican flag for emancipation, they have decided to fly that flag, and that is an insult to our country.
Philippa Davies, advocacy officer for the Jamaica Coalition for a Healthy Society, says the flag represents life practices that threatens the Jamaican culture and the teachings of the Bible. She says it also affects the health of the society.
You have to understand what that multicolor flag represents. It represents normalizing perverse sexual behaviors and lifestyle choices, behaviors and lifestyles that lead to disease and death. Our Christian duty is to speak the truth in love.
Protesters say they've been peacefully protesting that the flag be taken down since the day it was raised, but are shocked it remains on the flagpole up to Emancipendence Week. Efforts to contact the U.S. consulate and a member of the LGBTQ group on Friday proved futile. However, the protesters say they will continue to stand against the flying of the rainbow-colored flag, describing it as a symbol of disrespect on Jamaican soil.
Article 20 specifically says the only flag that should fly is their national flag. The LGBT flag is not their national flag. Their own people have not agreed to that at all, okay?
You know what's, thank you, Sarah. You know what's weird? And I never would have imagined saying this 5 years ago, but if things continue in this crazy direction where this tsunami of ideology just continues to flatten everything in its path, I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but how many ridiculous things have we seen lately? Can you imagine if eventually, this is too crazy, I can't even say it. Well, I'm going to say it. Imagine how crazy it would be, and I don't mean in a good way, if eventually that does become a sovereign national flag, the rainbow flag, where it would, I don't know, be incorporated into the American flag. Sometimes nations change their flags. I like our flag. I like the stars and stripes. But imagine if where the field of stars is, you know, the red box with the white stars in it, imagine if that were replaced by the rainbow flag.
Oh, I know, Patrick.
I know. It sounds absurd, but it's things are moving in that direction. I mean, when did you ever hear of the United States government at a, and I don't know if this was an embassy or if it was a, you know, some lower level installation. When have you ever heard of flying at a government installation like that, an American flag and a rainbow flag? Why do that? What message is that sending? What is the point of that? The point is that this has become the all-encompassing new policy of at least this administration of the government. Who knows what the next administration may bring? I don't know. But it's been trending in this direction, and they're doing it because they can. They can do it, and there's nothing you can do about it. And these Jamaican folks who don't like it, so what? I'm sure that's the attitude of the people in the embassy, or at least the people who are in charge of putting that flag up there. They don't care. These are black people in their own country protesting what they deem to be an insult to them and their national sovereignty, and they don't like it. Now, is that the whole country? No, obviously not. This is a small group of people, but they represent, I would say, a sizable number of people in Jamaica as a whole. And their feelings don't matter. The fact that they're black doesn't matter. The fact that it's their country doesn't matter. And so this is, I think, the way the guy put it at the beginning of the audio. He said this is a slap in the face. I forget how he said it exactly, but it's a direct insult to the people for this country, the United States, to fly that flag as if it were some kind of a national flag. So I wonder if in due time, if things continue to get worse, if they'll just say, you know what, that whole 50 states, the stars in the red field, let's just replace that with the rainbow. And then it is our national flag, and then they can't complain about it. Cyrus, can you believe the world we're living in now?
Are you totally deranged?
I am not. I'm happy to report. I am not.
I sure hope this is one of the times you're wrong.
I know. It just sounded outlandish to even have the thought, much less say it on national radio, that eventually the rainbow flag would be incorporated into the American flag. Whoever would have come up with anything that ridiculous? There, I've said it.
It's like a bad science fiction movie.
But you know what, Cyrus? If X number of years from now it happens, I mean, can you imagine the conversation we're going to have then? You were so, it was ridiculous on stilts, Patrick, when you said that. I couldn't believe you even said that.
If it gets to that point, they'll probably pull, by then they'll have pulled us. Like, there won't be a relevant radio at that point. They'll have stopped all kind of communication like this.
You may be in prison not making license plates. You may be in prison making rainbow flags.
Yep.
In prison. A penny a flag. That's what they'll pay you.
Well, I hope you're my bunk buddy.
No. No. I want to be in solitary confinement. Let's go to Manuel in Ontario, Canada. Hi, Manuel.
Yes, good morning, Patrick. I just wanted to bring a point up that was recently, actually recently came up in a conversation with me, with a friend of mine. This whole thing of however many number of genders is concerned, mm-hmm. I mean, aside from just basic biology, male, female, and all that, when you look at the field of archaeology and so on, and when bones of deceased people are dug up, how do they identify them? The bones are clearly different between male and female.
Right.
There's just nothing else in between. So you can call yourself whatever you'd like while you're here, but if your grave ever gets dug up, they're going to identify you as either male or female.
That's true. But that's all science and stuff. That's science and reality. And that doesn't fly, you know, with people who don't agree with that.
It's really sad to see the way that everything's gone.
So your problem, Manuel, is that you think logically. That's your problem. And if only you were just willing to divest yourself of logic and facts, then you would be able to move freely.
Yeah.
And mix freely with people.
And you know what?
You're just too logical.
I mean, yeah, exactly. But this whole thing of a person might feel this way or that way, yeah, okay, people have feelings, but doesn't mean that feelings are actual reality. Right?
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. Oh. Like anorexia, the girl who thinks that she's fat but is actually emaciated, she really is convinced that she's fat, but she's not fat. She's in danger of dying if she continues with that. It's a misunderstanding of reality. And we seek help for people like that, don't we? We don't try to play into the delusion and keep promoting it. We try to help them.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I'm
glad you called.
Yes. Thank you. And have a great day.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Relevant Radio in Canada. Let's go to Paul in Minneapolis now. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Patrick. Gosh, how prescient of you to always use bulimia and anorexia as your go-to analog for gender dysphoria. Because I was just reading over the weekend a summary by Abigail Schreier of her book, Irreversible Damage. And I think she makes a really good point, maybe not explicitly, that we shouldn't be making an a priori argument about gender dysphoria, but instead we should be looking at the statistics. Because gender dysphoria, as exhibited among young people in our society today, is not seemingly natural and spontaneous, but suspiciously social, because it occurs among females more than among males. And whereas actually historically, gender dysphoria happens among younger males, typically, you know, like at age 4 or 5, she says, and citing statistics, that today it's been spread like a social disease, like anorexia or bulimia. And I think that this is an insight that we're lacking when we're simply trying to argue from sort of an a priori psychological and what's the nature of existence and what's the nature of gender, which I would also say gender actually comes from the same word genesis and and gender does. So I'd say actually gender has more to do with your ability to reproduce than sex even does. But I just wanted to comment that that was a huge insight for me, that I didn't realize that it was much more a problem that females suffer from today more than even males. And if that is indeed true, and I don't doubt, yes. No,
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I concur. I really like Abigail Schreier's work. And so her book, Irreversible Damage, is one that I've purchased copies and copies of to give away to people that I think can benefit from them. It's an important work. And, you know, the fact that she's Jewish and she's approaching this as somewhat, she's not approaching it from a religious standpoint. She's not a Christian. B, it's not a religious tractate or anything like that. She's just looking at this as a phenomenon and she's up in arms about it. So, yeah, I agree. Her work is very important, very helpful right now. I wish I had more time, Paul. I've got to take a break, though. Thanks for calling in. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Thank you again, those of you who participated in our record-breaking pledge drive last week. If you weren't able to participate, you can still make a pledge by going to relevantradio.com or use the Relevant Radio app. I'll be right back.